All right, folks. The way I have structured the presentation is I'm going to talk to a very specific topic here. You know, it's a topic of committing units. Committing units meaning when should you start a unit and when should you stop a unit is a critical decision in the operation of a hydro facility. And we have applied a technique to solve this problem. So I will just give you a flavor of the theory. I don't want to go too deep into the theory. We are a little bit short of time as well. So I will start off the presentation by giving you some of the benefits we have been able to audit specifically relating to this application, software application, and then move on to the theory. And if there is time permitting, I will show you a quick demonstration on how it works. I've got an offline application which can clearly demonstrate how efficient the algorithm is. Now, Rick gave an excellent introduction to our hydroelectric facilities. Our biggest facilities being Sir Adam Beck Generating Station. Now, the capacity that I'm showing there relates only to Sir Adam Beck Generating Station number 1 and number 2 only. If you include our PGS facility and our facilities at DQ, that capacity increases to the number that Rick showed you. The next biggest station is on the St. Lawrence River, Saunders Generating Station. It has a capacity of about 800 megawatts. Now, Saunders has 16 different units, and there are 3 different unit types. Not all units are identical, so that brings about the challenge of determining when to start a unit and when to stop a unit depending upon the availability of water. Now, what are the advantages? Sorry. Typically for a station. Now, typically for a station of 800 megawatts, your savings can range anywhere from $250,000 to about $600,000. And typically for a station of that magnitude, your savings can go all the way up to $800,000 per station. You're right. Now, what are the advantages of unit commitment? Typically, we run at a better station efficiency. We can minimize the unnecessary starts and stops of units. The operation of the station can be made very consistent. It doesn't change from operator to operator. We can minimize hydraulic wear and tear on the units. Cavitation and other operating limits can be respected so that we don't damage the units through cavitation. Cavitation is a process which damages the unit. It's common to all hydroelectric facilities. And since we minimize cavitation, the runner life is extended. Now, to any unit commitment problems, we need to have certain inputs. The typical inputs to a unit commitment problem are the station base point. That is, we need to know where we will be running the station given the amount of river flow that is available to us. Now, that operating point is called the base point. Now, on top of that, we have an added degree of complexity. That is, if the particular station is going to supply AGC or automatic generation control, then that adds another level of complexity to the unit commitment problem. Now, automatic generation control is a process whereby you balance the generation to the demand, and it is necessary in any alternating current power system. Now, the unit rating tables characterize the performance of the unit. Now, each unit has a specific performance characteristic. I'll talk a little bit to that in this presentation, but for the time being, accept it as being necessary for the solution of the unit commitment problem. Now, on top of that, we have operating constraints, we have unit availability constraints, and we have unit operating modes. I perhaps shouldn't go too deep into these, but for the time being, just know that these are the typical operating constraints which govern the solution to the problem. Now, shown here is a curve showing how we have operated the Sir Adam Beck complex in the past. The little yellow dots, now mind this, the data behind this is relatively old. We have since improved the performance of the station considerably, but this data dates back to roughly 95-96. The little yellow dots show the actual operation of the station, and the solid envelope there shows what the station efficiency is if you do not commit the units, that is, if you continue to run all 16 available units all the time. Now, shown in green there is the efficiency curve of the station if you start committing units with an AGC reserve margin of 300. And shown in red is the same station efficiency curve with an AGC reserve margin of 200, and the light blue line 400, and the topmost line if there is no AGC reserve margin. So just to give an example, supposing you have no AGC requirement from the station, and if you operate, if your station operating target is, let's say for argument's sake, somewhere there 750 megawatts, then by not committing the units you will be operating at an efficiency there, but by committing the units you are improving the efficiency by nearly 3 to 4%, right? For a station as large as Sir Adam Beck, this 3 to 4% can amount to hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings annually. Now, shown here is the audited benefit for a station we worked on in the late 90s. Now, the light blue lines are due to economic dispatch. Now, I'm not going to touch on that topic in this presentation. However, the red lines show the benefits in committing the units optimally. Now, you can see that with the different AGC margins, as you start committing the units optimally, that is, starting and stopping units optimally, you reach a point where you get the maximum benefit, and beyond which the benefit starts dropping. So this sort of analysis helps us to determine the optimal amount of automatic generation control we can supply from a specific station. Right. Now, shown here is a typical schema of how you would implement a unit commitment application at a hydroelectric generating station. Sorry. Now, the operator has to input certain quantities. Typically, the operator would input the station base point, the station reserve, the unit availability, and the unit operating modes. Automatically, we can poll the station remote terminal units to gather information on operating limits, the actual generation output of the station, the current commitment of the station, and the actual running hours of the units. And in real time, we can compare the actual operation of the station to its capacity to determine the actual reserve. Now, this information, all this information gets fed into the optimal dispatch algorithm, and the optimal dispatch algorithm, which includes the unit commitment component, will tell the operator, continuously feedback information on how many units he should be running optimally. And the operator looks at that information on his console and decides whether he is going to implement the commitment strategy or not. Now, the important thing to note here is that operator is continuously in the loop. We have not removed the operator from the loop. The simple reason is when you are dealing with machinery running into hundreds of millions of dollars, we cannot depend entirely on an automatic process to drive the units towards optimality. So in order to mitigate that risk, we have decided to keep the operator always in the loop, and the operator makes the final decision on whether he's going to acknowledge the commitment coming from the optimal dispatch algorithm or not. But mind you, every time the operator overrides a commitment decision, he is essentially running the plant suboptimally, and the overall efficiency of the station will go down, and the potential benefits of the station will also go down. Potential unit commitment benefits will also go down. Now, this is another schematic, again, going a little bit deeper into the overall implementation of such a scheme. Now, the key points I want to highlight in this are, in any application of this magnitude, you need to have at least three different databases. You need to have what we call a real-time database, where you need to keep information at one-minute intervals. Then you have a database which we call an hourly database. It's more towards it's more oriented towards studies, where information at hourly intervals are held there. And we have a static database which contains information on unit characteristics and any other information that does not change too frequently. Shown here is a typical hydroelectric unit characteristics. The red line, note that this is a three-dimensional figure. We have generation on that axis. We have operating head on that axis, and we have flow on that axis. The red represents the performance characteristic of one type of unit, and the green represents the performance characteristic of another type of unit. Now, there are a couple of questions on efficiency. Now, for instance, if you take an operating megawatt of 30 megawatts, you know, and draw a plane through that, you can see that the green unit is less efficient. The green unit is more efficient than the red unit. Can everybody see that? Because at 30 megawatt, the green unit consumes less flow compared to the red unit. So the more flow it takes, the less efficient it is. Right. So this is just to illustrate the different unit characteristics. Another key point I want to show here is that this point at which the curves bend upwards, you know, is the point of best efficiency. Actually, the point of best efficiency is obtained by drawing a tangent from the origin to these curves. The point at which the tangent intersects that curve determines the best efficiency points corresponding to the different heads. Okay. Now, the point of best efficiency is a very important characteristic of a hydroelectric unit, which is exploited in the unit commitment algorithm that I'll be speaking to very briefly. Okay. Now, now we get to the formulation of the unit commitment problem. Now, I kept the mathematics to a minimum. At the end of the presentation, I have given a couple of references. This problem is described in fair degree of detail in one of those references. Actually, I'll show you which reference it is. Anyway, we're almost 7 o'clock. How much time can I take? 15 minutes, okay, that's all right with all of you. Anyway, okay. All right, so the classic unit commitment problem is of this type, you know, where you have a commitment variable. Now, this is a digital variable. It can take only two values, either a 0 or a 1, right? And this Q, the notation Q I'm using, is for the flow passed through the unit. Now, what we are trying to do here is we are trying to minimize the flow. In other words, we are maximizing the production, right? I mean, whether you maximize the production or minimize the flow, they are one and the same. I mean, if you think through it, you will figure it out. Then we also have operating constraints on the power that the unit can produce. Any unit can operate only between a maximum power and a minimum power, so we have to respect that constraint. And the third important constraint we have to satisfy is that the total output from the station has to satisfy a specific target. We always operate to certain targets. Now, Hans spoke on the offer curves. Now, on the offer curves are discrete megawatts, and those discrete megawatts are what make up these targets, right? Per station. When you look at when you drill down that curve and go down to the station level, each station will have a specific target to which it operates. Now, the flow through the unit. Now, that is, the flow through the unit is related to the power of the unit based upon the performance characteristics of the unit that I showed you previously. Now, this relationship at constant heads will give you a relationship between the power and the flow, right? Now, that is the relationship that I am representing mathematically that way. So I will move on to the next slide. Now this is again, now you can, okay, go back to the earlier one. Now you can see how nonlinear the performance characteristic is. If you try to fit a single polynomial through that, you are never going to succeed. And it's very important to represent this curve as accurately as possible, because if you do not represent the curve, or if you do not model the curve as accurately as possible, your solution is not going to have any practical value to it. For instance, you might come up with a solution which, if you try to implement it in the field, you might find that it's non-implementable. So it's very important for you to track the curve as closely as possible in your modeling. Now, if you look closely, this curve has a nonlinear region there, and it has a fair amount of linearity there, and it's a severe degree of nonlinearity there. Now, this region of the curve is typically non-convex, in the sense that you typically cannot optimize in that region. But once you cross that knee point, the curve exhibits good convex behavior, which fits very well with most of our mathematical programming theory. So what I have done here is I have broken that curve up, this entire curve, I have broken it up into a series of piecewise linear and quadratic functions in order to make the algorithm work and in order for the solution to be implementable in the field. Now, moving on, the problem to be solved is a problem of a classical problem in mathematical optimization, where the Lagrangian function has to be minimized. Now, the Lagrangian function, as you can see, is comprised of, you know, if you go back to the previous slide, the objective function and the equality constraint, right? Now, I have done some rearrangement here, and if you go back later on and work through the mathematics, you will see that the Lagrangian function can be expressed in that form. Now, there are three steps in the optimization. First of all, you have to minimize the Lagrangian function with respect to the system marginal water rate, that is lambda. Secondly, you have to minimize it with respect to the switching variable. Thirdly, you have to minimize it with respect to the station power. It's, perhaps I shouldn't go too deep into that for the time being. You can read the paper if you want to get more information on how the formulation is done. So the step one, we minimize the Lagrangian, right? We minimize the Lagrangian with respect to the power. Then step two, we minimize the Lagrangian with respect to the switching variable. Third, we maximize the Lagrangian dual with respect to the marginal water rate, which is lambda. So these are the three steps we have to solve before the entire problem can be solved. Now perhaps I think I will now I was just wondering whether I should stop there and go with the demonstration, because we are running a little bit short in time. So the demonstration will be more interesting to you. However, what I will do is I will jump from here to the list of references. Now, the theory is described in that reference. It's a PICA presentation, Power Industry Computer Application presentation. In 1997, the paper describes in fair degree of detail how we did the formulation, and it gives a certain insight into the mechanisms of the Lagrangian relaxation technique. So I would probably ask you to read that, and if there are questions, you can either get in touch with Hans or send me an email, and I'll try to explain. So if you don't mind, I'll stop now and show you a demonstration on how the unit commitment works. Yeah, you have it. Sure. Yeah. Sure. Right. Now the paper is fairly dense, in the sense, you know, any IEEE paper you have to write within 4 to 5 pages. Perhaps years worth of work, you know. So if you need some background information, the papers preceding that will give you a lot of background information on how we arrive at the sort of formulation in this specific paper. So actually there's continuity here. You just go through that and come there. But for people who are already familiar with the Lagrangian relaxation technique, perhaps you can skip all that and go straight to the paper. Okay. So what I will do is I will now this is a fairly generic application. We can apply to any hydroelectric station, but I'm going to apply it to the Sir Adam Beck generating station number 1 and 2, because Rick gave an excellent background on that particular station. So I feel that if I structure the demonstration to that station, it'll certainly enhance your understanding of how the station is committed optimally and operated optimally. Okay, so now this is an option we have available to select the station of interest. Now in this case, I'm going to select the station Sir Adam Beck generating station number 1 and Sir Adam Beck generating station number 2. Now after the station is selected, now this is a list of all the available units at the station. Rick mentioned to you we have 26 units at the station. We have 10 units at Sir Adam Beck generating station number 1, and we have 16 units at Sir Adam Beck generating station number 2. Now that is the unit number and that is the unit type, and as you can see we have 6 different unit types at that particular station. Now on this side, on your right, you will find options for telling the application how the units are going to be operated. For instance, if a specific unit is not available due to maintenance, you tell the application that the particular unit is down for maintenance. Now for instance, unit 7, which is a 60 cycle unit, is currently being converted to, sorry, unit 7 is a 25 cycle unit, which is currently being converted to 60 cycle, so it's unavailable for generation. So we tell the application that it is unavailable. So we say that particular unit is down. So when we say a particular unit is down, it automatically switches off the breaker and takes it off the power system. Now this unit number 4 is available, so we say it's available. Now you may recall that Rick mentioned that units 1 and 2 are 25 cycle units, and we always have a 25 cycle load which we are obligated to supply. So what we will do is we will make those units must run units. A must run unit is a unit which will run all the time. The unit commitment algorithm will never shut it down, but it will optimize the operation of the unit in relation to its neighboring units. So we specify that particular unit as a must run unit, and when you specify a unit as a must run unit, you must also specify the megawatt at which it will operate. Now in this case, we will assume that it is going to operate at a megawatt of 30. Now typically our 25 cycle load is about 20 megawatts, isn't it, Rick? Typically, so we will run the second unit also as a must run unit at an output of 10, so we get that 20 megawatts. Now you may ask, why are we running two units? It's just to have some degree of redundancy there in the event that one of those units were to go down, we still can supply the 25 cycle demand. Okay, now these units are available, so I'll switch them back on. So all those units are available for production. Now, just a point to note, you know, this application, when linked to the station SCADA system, can be made to turn units on and off automatically, right? But since it's an offline application, I'm doing it manually. All right. Now, next thing we have to do is we have to tell the application what the operating head is. Now, Rick mentioned that the operating head is about 290 feet. So what we do is we put that in there. In real life, that information can be pulled off the station SCADA system. Right. Now we are almost ready to go. Now we have to tell the application how much water is available to run back generating station number 1 and 2. Now I looked at the operation yesterday and I found that on average we were using about 62,300 cubic feet of water. I'll put that in there. Now we'll tell the application to advise us on how many units to run in order to maximize the station efficiency. So you click on the commitment button. Okay. Sorry, folks. I thought we tested it. Sorry, just a minute. Okay. Started from here, right? Where? Here? Oh, that one. Okay, right. So sorry, folks, I have to start all over again. Okay, that is fine. Okay, that is fine. So we'll have to turn that on. We have to turn all that on again. And we have to turn off unit 7. Unit 7 is, sorry, unit 7, unit 7 is unavailable, and we have to make that a must run unit. We have to make that a must run unit running at 10 megawatts and 10 megawatts, and we change the head to 290 feet, and we set the target at 62,300 CFS, and we run an optimal commitment. Okay, so now it's recommending, so for units of type 2, it's saying don't turn it off. It's already running. It's saying no change, which means don't turn it off. For units of type 3, we have unit 3 and unit 10 of type 3. It's recommending that we shut those units down. So let's shut those units down. Shut those units down. And here it's saying for units of type 4, it's saying run only 2 units, which means presently there are 3 units running. It's recommending that we shut down 1 unit. Now in this case, you know, now all 3 units are of the same type, and it's recommending that we shut 1 unit down. Now typically an operator would look at how many hours each of those units had been running prior to this commitment decision. For example, if unit 8 has run more number of hours than units 5 and 6, he might decide to turn that off in favor of units 5 and 6. But again, the cost of operating the station will be same irrespective of which of these 5, 6 and 8 you decide to shut off. So in this case, let me shut unit 8 off. Now for units of type 5, there is no change, and for units of type 6, it's recommending that we run all these units. So we have to now start all of them up. So start all of them. Okay, now we are ready to run in what we call an economic dispatch. Now we have decided, or based upon the recommendation, we know how many of these 26 units we have to actually run. The next problem to solve is the economic dispatch problem, which I briefly mentioned. I didn't go deep into it. The economic dispatch problem decides at which operating point each of these units must operate. So we run the economic dispatch point, and there we have the solution. Now perhaps the graphical illustration would be better in this case. Now you can see unit 1 is running, unit 2 is running. These are 25 cycle units, and we have shut down these units for optimality, and the remaining units are dispatched as shown here. Now this little circle that you see here is the point of best efficiency, right? Now you can see that this unit is slightly below best efficiency, that unit is almost at best efficiency, and these units are pegged at 10 megawatts, so they are not dispatched. So this is the optimal strategy for that particular station, for that particular flow. Now if the operator is interested in knowing the exact megawatts the operator must set those units to operate at, he looks at this column and he is advised on where each of those units should be set to operate. Now from the point of view of optimality, the key parameter of interest is the average water rate. Now the average water rate determines the amount of water used at the station. It's like your miles per gallon indicator in your car. Now higher this value, the more efficient the station is. Lower the value, the lower the efficiency of the station is. Now in order to demonstrate that this is the optimal solution, what we could do is, we could, now the optimal solution recommended that these units should be turned off, right? Now, if we were to forcibly turn those units on, you will find that for the same amount of flow, the amount of production from the station will actually go down, and your actual water rate would also go down. Now, that's a way of testing the optimality. Now, how do we know that the program is working, right? So, as an experiment, let's force the units that we have shut down to come back on. So you go back, you force those units back on, turn it on, that you cannot turn on because it's down, turn it on. Now if you run an optimal dispatch, there you go. Now your station output has come down. Come down to 1402.6 megawatts, and your marginal water rate has dropped to 22.5. So basically, if you ignore the unit commitment recommendation, you run the plant inefficiently. If you implement the unit commitment, or if you take the unit commitment recommendation as given, you improve the station efficiency. But there again, you have to strike a balance on how often you are going to start the unit and stop the unit. So you need to have a fairly good idea of what the river flow conditions are going to be going forward. And if the river flow conditions are going to change substantially, you may choose not to turn a unit off. So these are certain fine tunings that go on at the station level. So with that, I'll probably conclude my presentation, and I apologize I couldn't go through the whole thing, but you are welcome to go through the paper and email us back with questions. Okay.